Welcome to the MRP Tech Podcast. This is episode 42. My name is Matt. I am your host. And hopefully in today's episode, you'll find the answers to the ultimate questions of life, the universe, and everything. We've got a great show for you lined up today. And I'm so happy that you're all joining us to listen each and every week to the MRP Tech Podcast over on the Podnuts Tech Podcast Network. Got a lot of fun things to talk about today. I'm going to make a sort of Google-centric episode here today. And a few weeks ago, my nephew got a Chromebook for Christmas, and I was really happy for him, and I was excited for him. And on his Chromebook, we sort of came across the fact that this particular Chromebook was advertising access to the Google Play Store. And I was really interested in that because over the last few months, we've heard a lot about Android and Chrome OS merging together. And I know on my Chromebook, I never had access to the Play Store itself. So a few days went by and we realized that we couldn't get access to the Google Play Store. So I did a little research and it turned out that this particular model, the only way that you could access the Play Store on this Chromebook was by enabling developer mode. Now, for someone like me, developer mode is rather easy to manage, and I can work out all the processes required to do that. But I'm not expecting, you know, elementary students to be, or even middle school students to be, able to survive in a sort of developer environment. So it made me start thinking a little bit more about Chrome OS. And we found out eventually that the Google Play Store will be enabled on this particular Chromebook, but it's not going to happen for the immediate future. So I got started, and I got started with the process of thinking more about Chrome OS, and I decided to take Solus OS off of my Chromebook. Now, when I purchased my Chromebook, what I really wanted to do is I really wanted to use it as a Linux-based computer. And everything on the Chromebook told me that my particular model, the Acer C720, you could do that with. And I played around for months and months with different Linux distros, and finally I settled on the Solus OS and the Solus project. The project itself was interesting. It worked well on the Chromebook. All the drivers worked, and so on. And I figured that I would stay that way with Solus on this Chromebook for a long time. Well, of course, I'm never satisfied with anything, so I decided to restore my Chromebook to its original state with Chrome OS on it and give Chrome OS another shot. I sort of have a love-hate relationship with Chrome OS. It's very simple. It does the job. It's very fast. Great battery life on the Chromebooks. But when I access things like the Chrome Web Store, I can't really find a whole lot of useful apps, to be honest, for what I use day to day. If you're using Google products, Chromebooks are great, but for other things, not so much. So I restored my Chromebook back to Chrome OS just to give it another shot, because it has been probably 4 months now, 5 months that I've been using Linux on it without any problems whatsoever. So as I go on talking about Chrome OS, this isn't a shot on Solus for any reason. This isn't saying that I was unhappy with the way that Linux was working on the Chromebook. This is just me moving on to another project for this podcast. So after I got my Chromebook back to its original state, I turned developer mode off. I turned off all the fancy things such as USB boot and legacy boot, everything that I had set to be able to run Linux on this particular computer. I just wanted straight Chrome OS. And one thing that I really like about the Chromebooks is you can, when you log in, it's like the very last time that you have logged in before. If you've logged into a Chrome web browser, you have all of your apps ready to go. No matter which Chromebook you're using, you can use one Chromebook and move to another Chromebook. Everything follows you wherever you go. That's really handy. However, I found something very limiting about using Chromebooks. And I was able to navigate the Chrome Web Store for probably about 10 minutes, just scrolling through all of the available apps, not really finding a whole lot of things that I found useful. So I was approaching the point where I was thinking about selling my Chromebook. I've gotten a few other devices recently. It's not really a high priority on my list, and I could do other things. I could review other products with the money that I used to sell the Chromebook. But in the back of my mind, I was hesitant to do that because I know in my school district, we're waiting for state approval to roll out Chromebooks in our district. And it's a good thing that I did that, because just this past week, I was talking with my superintendent in my district, and we had a superintendent's day coming up, and he mentioned to me that might be a good idea to take a look over some of the training that Google has to offer when it comes to using Google devices like Android tablets or Chromebooks, and all of the apps that are available in Google Apps for Education. This was something that I was interested in before. As I mentioned in a prior podcast, it's something that I wanted to take just for the fun of it and get some training in some of the Google apps, such as Google Docs, Google Drive, Sheets, Slides, and all of the other apps that are available to educators. So if you are interested in learning anything about the Google Apps for Education, Google offers a great training center online, and it's free to anyone who is an educator. And there are various levels of certification that you can get, and you don't even need to get the certification. You can just take the training for free just to learn more about what they have to offer. So last week, I took the Google Certified Educator Level 1 training, and I spent all day going through what they had to offer, and I was able to learn a few things that I was unaware of as far as Google is concerned. And I wrote up a short blog post on my website, www.mrptechreviews.com, on some of the things that I found different or things that I was unaware of with these Google products. So as you go through the level one training, basically it's setting you up for success in the classroom. So you go through, in this first level of training, there's 13 different units. And some of the topics that they address is things like getting ready to use technology in your classroom, expanding your access to help students in their learning, having mostly paperless classrooms, saving time communicating, teaching yourself to organize activities with you and other people, such as using the tasks in Google Keep, also how to use Google Calendar. Now, these have been things that I've been using for years now with Google products. But they did have some tips that I was unaware of that helped me become more productive almost immediately. They help you measure and understand and share student growth. They teach you how to teach students online skills. You can build interactive lessons with students. You're helping the students with things like group work. And one of the things that I found most relevant is teaching students digital citizenship, and how to behave properly online, and what to do in the case of the inevitable, which is students coming across material online that is not suitable for education. And the coursework was definitely comprehensive. It was filled with information, great tips, great questions. And as you finish each task within a unit, you are given questions to answer, and then you have a unit test at the end of each unit. And once you sort of complete and pass each unit, you move on to the next one. And as you complete all 13 units, then you are able to take the Google Certified Educator Level 1 exam, if you choose to. You don't have to, obviously. But if you're interested in becoming something like a Google Certified Trainer, you've got to pass the Level 1 exam. You've got to pass the Level 2 exam. You have to take device training for Android and Chromebooks, Android tablets and Chromebooks. And then you have to take the trainer course, which helps you when it comes to actually teaching adults how to use these products so that they can use them in the classroom. So there are two certification exams plus a device training and a trainer course that you have to take to become a Google certified trainer. And I'm not sure how far I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go on to level two now that I have passed the level one exam. And I can't really talk about the level one exam because I signed a non-disclosure agreement. But if you go through all the units and you take your time and you're familiar with Google Apps for Education, the Google One exam, it will take you a while, but it's not really super difficult. And I'm curious. I'm going to go on to level two. I will probably take the level two exam when I'm finished. If that goes well, I may go on to become a Google certified trainer, because earlier this year I had the opportunity to give some Google training, and I actually really enjoyed it, and I got a lot of great feedback from the group of people that I worked with for an afternoon. So again, I will put the link in the show notes for anybody interested in training for Google Apps for Education or becoming a Google certified educator. I think anybody using Google in a educational setting should be required to go through at least all the units, not necessarily the certification. But if I was a superintendent at a school district, I would very likely request that my educators in my district go through this training so that they can see what's available to them. And again, if you want to read on some of the thoughts that I have, more thoughts on this, go over to my website, mrptechreviews.com. I put a short blog post up there talking about my experiences with the training center itself. Okay, moving on to another topic now, Google related. Over the last few weeks, I've talked a lot about Remix OS and the ability to become and have available to you the first Android PC. Android not on a tablet, but something you can install on your computer or purchase as a mini PC that you can use for just about anything. And months ago, I reviewed Remix OS. This is actually a file you can download and install on a computer, an operating system you can install on your computer that lets you play with Android for free, basically. But it gives you features that you would normally have on a computer, like a taskbar down at the bottom of your computer, or multi-window, multitasking, mouse and keyboard support, and so on. Well, this past week, I returned back to school from a nice vacation, and I was happy to see that I had a package waiting for me, and the door-to-door geek from Podnuts has sent me a product to review. And so what he sent me was the Remix Mini, and it's a mini computer, and it's about the size, a little bigger than a deck of cards. And the Mini is something that I was interested in trying because they advertise themselves as the first true Android PC. And on the Remix Mini website over at jide.com/mini, it says, powered by the Remix OS, Remix Mini allows you to work and play with the entire Android app ecosystem while taking full advantage of the intuitive PC features such as taskbar, multi-window, multitasking, keyboard support, and so much more. And if you scroll down, it gives you a brief review of the product, and it gives you some information that I want to read to you because I'm going to come back to it in just a few minutes. It says, while everyone else is spending top dollar for the latest and greatest hardware specs just to check their email and watch YouTube videos, we realize that there is so much more to creating a great PC. And it says, through carefully engineered optimization of hardware and software, Remix Mini is able to undeniably live up to its motto, less can be more. Now, one of the things that I was really excited about is that this has an Ethernet port on it, comes with Wi-Fi installed on it, two USB drives, it has Bluetooth 4.0, and it has a mini SD card slot for expanding the allotted amount of size that you can use to expand the internal storage. And I believe it's up to 128 gigs that you can use, 128 gigs on that SD card. The model that I got was the 16 gigabyte version, has 2 gigs of RAM. And I was really excited for a couple of reasons. And one of the things that I wanted to do is I wanted to show my students this, and I wanted to have my students review this with me and see what they thought of it. So I opened the box, I took everything out, and immediately I wanted to turn it on and let it rip and see what it had to offer. So I was sitting at my desk in my office, and I had an extra monitor available. And this monitor has a VGA connection, and it has a DVI connection. So I had a DVI to HDMI cable lying around, and I plugged in the Remix Mini, and I setup was really easy. It comes with a power cord and an HDMI cable, basically. and then you are ready to go. I had a keyboard and mouse lying around. I plugged those in, and I really like the capacitive touch. You just set your fingers on the top, and it turns on. Well, my first experience is I turned it on, and there was no display in the monitor. I said, oh, this is frustrating. And my first thought was, it must be the DVI to HDMI connection isn't supported. So quick search on Google, and sure enough, that's the case. The last time that I ran into this problem with a DVI to HDMI cord not being supported is when I was running Windows on my MacBook Pro in boot camp. I had Windows installed, and I was trying to plug into an external projector, and they didn't support that particular connection, DVI to HDMI. So I ran through some online forums for Remix OS, and sure enough, the HDMI to DVI is an issue. So I said, okay, I want to not let this get me down. It was a little bit of a bummer to not be able to show my students this because I have a particular monitor set up at school, and it wasn't going to work. But I did read that there was other ways around, but I have to purchase a new cable through Amazon. No big deal. So I took it home, and within minutes, I had the Remix OS up and running. I was familiar with the layout of Remix OS. I've used Remix OS before on an old laptop that I had, and I remembered really enjoying Remix OS for certain things. So side by side, I had an Apple TV and I had Remix OS. So I unplugged the Apple TV, plugged in Remix OS on a TV that I had available because the monitors that I have at home are slightly older. They don't have HDMI connections. And sure enough, within minutes, Remix OS was up and running. Now, one of the really nice things that I enjoyed about the Remix OS is as you turn it on for the first time, it gives you an opportunity to calibrate it for the screen that you're using. And how they do that, I thought that was really neat. They basically have you use the keyboard or mouse, and you adjust the screen settings until you can see a red line all the way around the outside border of your screen. And that makes it sure that the resolution is set correctly. I thought that was a nice touch because I know in the past, using other operating systems, sometimes I would run into screen resolution problems where things didn't sit just right on especially TVs. So no problems whatsoever. Remix Mini is actually quite fast for the 2 gigabytes that it has available and the hardware itself. I was really impressed with how fast it ran. I was up and running again in minutes. I was using a Wi-Fi connection and I was downloading apps. The Google Play Store was built in, which was something that I struggled with when I downloaded Remix OS onto my laptop. I had to actually install a Google Play Store, and for some reason I was having difficulty doing that months ago. Google Play Store was installed automatically, no issues whatsoever. Basically, add my credentials, and I was up and running with no problems whatsoever. So then I decided to see what I could do and how far I could take the Remix Mini. And browsing the web, it is absolutely great for. I started downloading some games and other Android apps. And so one of the things that I talked about just a few weeks ago was a rocket landing simulator. So that was fresh in my mind. So I downloaded that and I tried to play the game and realized there was no keyboard bindings for the game itself. So the game would work, but I couldn't control anything in the game. So I said, okay, let's try another game. So I downloaded a couple of Star Wars games and tried to see if they would work with either a mouse or keyboard settings. And ran into problems. I couldn't get anything to work with the keyboard. Sometimes I could get the mouse to work with it. So I said, okay, I'm not going to stop there. Let's try doing a little research. So I went on, and sure enough, there are a few games that are supported, and you have to check to make sure that keyboard and mouse are supported on that particular app in the Android store. So I said, okay, I know what I'm going to do. In the past, when using Android, I was able to use a PlayStation controller and control the games with a PlayStation controller connected through USB. I believe I tried this the last time I was using Remix on a laptop. So I did that, and I had very limited controls with the PlayStation controller, but it did work outside of the box with no configuration whatsoever. So I was able to download, just for fun, Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens, and the PlayStation controller worked, and I was actually having a kind of fun time playing this game that I had never really played before, and I saw what the Remix Mini was capable of doing, and it worked quite well. It really did. So then what I wanted to do is, okay, I've got this Apple TV, an old version 1 Apple TV, and the Remix Mini, and I said, you know, this would be kind of nice to try to see if I could use it as a media consumption device. So I downloaded the YouTube app, and I wanted to watch some YouTube videos on it. And when I did that, the video would play, and it would play well, but if I moved to full screen, the video would freeze, and it would stop playing. I could hear the audio, but no video. And I would try several different videos along the way. As time went on, I said, okay, this must be an issue, and I went to the Remix website again, and didn't seem like there was a lot of people having problems with video playback. I'm not really sure what that was about. So, sure enough, I stopped for a while, and I came back to it, and there was an update to the operating system itself. It took about 15 minutes to download, and after that, I went back and tried YouTube videos, and it seemed as if YouTube videos were playing much better, although still some videos will freeze up in full screen mode. I'm not really sure what that's about. So there are a few apps that I did get to work well. There's some podcasting apps, Beyond Pod, I got working well. Any Google apps, I could work well. Google Docs. And it is really fast for the specs that are giving me. I will give that the credit. A few frustrations along the way. I'm not a heavy gamer, but the games, I was having difficulty. And I did read that if you rooted the device, you could get and download apps that will give you keyboard bindings and allow you to customize settings for the PlayStation controller, things like that. But I don't really want to mess too much with it at this point. So I know I'm giving a lot of criticism for this, but I do think it's an interesting project, and I do really like the idea of having Android on a desktop PC of some kind. I wish there was a few things that were working better on the Remix, but I did see in just the few days that I've had with this that I've been working on it, I haven't spent a whole lot of time on this just yet, and I will come back and update you in the future on this. But one of the things that I noticed was the updates right away, and I'm hoping that maybe, just maybe, that I've got to either catch up. It says my device is up to date when I went in the settings, but I'm hoping that with future updates that some of these problems might be worked out. Because if I could use this as a mini PC that I can hook up to a TV, I had a wireless keyboard and mouse that I was using, and everything was really smooth and even better than when I tried it previously on my laptop. Things just seem to work much better. So I'm hopeful that some of these kinks might get worked out. And if you have any information of links that I could find to get YouTube working a little better, and maybe something for keyboard bindings or controller bindings that I'm not sure about where to find those. So if you could send me those, I would be interested in that if you know and use the Remix Mini. Those are the problems that I've had, but I have a lot of good things to say about it too. Mostly the speed. I was really surprised with the speed. So, have you used the Remix Mini? Have you thought about Google Apps for Education or going through any type of Google training whatsoever? Do you use Chromebooks? I'd like some feedback on some of the comments that I said earlier. What are your favorite Chrome OS apps? Send those to me, and maybe I can review those on the show in a future episode. In the meantime, though, that's going to do it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm going to continue going. I hope you join me for my journey into anything tech here on the Podnuts Network. If you may have noticed, I might sound a little different this week, and I'm curious to hear how this turns out in the final release of this episode. I'm using a pop filter for the first time, and I'm hoping that I can eliminate some of the inconsistencies in the sound by doing this. So let me know if you notice a difference in the sound as well. I'm looking forward to next week's episode. I hope you are too. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.